So welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. And this is all about the power of entrepreneurship. So we're going to talk to someone who's a good friend, and he'll tell you the story of how he went from working in the post room of Saatchi & Saatchi to actually selling his business to Saatchi & Saatchi and beyond. So stay with us for another great episode.
In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Hey, and welcome to the Leadership Enigma, and I'm delighted to welcome Lloyd Sammons, who's currently the co-founder of Pep Talk, to this particular episode. So Lloyd, how are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, very well.
It's great to have you here, and I think that was a wonderful intro from post room to actually selling the business. Now, we're going to get to the great company that you've co-founded, Pep Talk, a little later on, but let's start with the post room. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I was, barely 16.
Yeah.
I dread to think what year it was. I'm not even going to try and work that out.
You don't have to reveal ages. It's fine.
I managed to cajole someone into getting me an interview. I got a job in the post room at Saatchi & Saatchi. I did probably only 5 or 6 months there. Actually, the people there were really lovely, and they advised me to go back to school to do A levels and to kind of progress my education, which I did. And then kind of came out the back of that, your path starts to change a little bit, and ended up in the music industry. To be honest, we won't talk about how I found music or the or the nights out or any of that. But yeah, I managed to find my way into the music industry working at EMI.
Wow. Now, there's a story in that in itself, without a doubt. I just want to go back slightly because, we hear of many, many successful people that they didn't go through, what I would call higher education or university. But they had this passion. They had something inside them that meant that they wanted to go out into the big wide world and do things and make things and be something. Did you have that when you were 16? Did you know at 16 that you just needed to get out and do something?
I come from a fairly unorthodox family in terms of, how we're set up, but very entrepreneurial, I suppose.
Right.
And to be honest with you, the university and everything wasn't really what our family did. So it never sort of seemed like a pathway. At school, I remember doing the careers evening, and you went and saw Ford and people like that for a good steady job, and it just I think it just never really in my heart kind of suited me. I loved the energy and buzz of coming up to London. We were out in the wilds of Essex, and just felt that that was where I should be, and I should be trying to do something a bit different to what everybody else was doing.
Gotcha. Okay. So when you were at Saatchi, you said that a number of people persuaded you to go back to education. So what is it that they said or that they did that flicked a switch for you and you thought, well, no, actually, I do want to do that, or I do need to do that? What changed?
Really, what changed was the fact that, they described how, you can jump from A to maybe D or E without having to
gotcha.
Steps in between, it was put in no uncertain terms that, the way into that industry and to be, to succeed was to go back to school.
Okay. So there is that spirit of the entrepreneur in you, and you found your way into music. And that's a story in itself, isn't it? But just take us from there, because obviously that led you into creating something which ended up being sold, right?
Yeah. So ended up at EMI, and it was just when, I mean, it was literally, you know, green screen computers still existed. Oh, so, maybe everyone listening doesn't know them so well, but yeah. So, and one day, you know, a computer that plugged into the wall with the single, the internet arrived. And a few people dotted around the business. One of them was, turns out to end up being my longtime business partner, Ann Couchy, were kind of tasked with working out what to do with it.
Right.
So, I think we were probably the youngest people there, and they probably just thought, okay, you guys get on with it. And I guess that really, probably lent into both of our spirits, you know, that actually we were more than happy to, you know, make it up as we went along,
yep.
You know, work it out, you know, try, fail, try again. And of course, you know, a little bit of good fortune that overnight, you know, these young kids suddenly were, you know, we were getting to go to the conferences and we were being asked into the big meetings. And, you know, you went from making the tea to kind of, I wouldn't say being important, but certainly being in the right environments very quickly.
And what caused that? I'm interested. What changed that from, as you say, making the tea to being in the meeting itself? Because was it your knowledge of the latest technology because you had experimented with it? What was the change?
Essentially, yes. I mean, so, you know, at the time, as I said, we're really fortunate, but, you know, we did some incredible things. We put, you know, every week was a new world record because, you know, you'd just done a webcast with Paul McCartney from the Cavern, you know, to probably about three or four people in the country could actually see it.
Right.
But because it was news, you would get a double page spread in the Times. You know, so actually what we did at the time was very much sort of PR focused, really PR driven as much as anything. You know, you would be doing these, you know, I mean, I don't know if you remember streaming, but it was a, you know, a postage stamp sized, you know, visual that you could barely make out with terrible audio.
I do remember, I'm older than you, I think, Lloyd. I do remember that. So you were an innovator at that point.
We were doing all sorts of interesting stuff, you know, and with brilliant bands. You know, we were working with Radiohead, we worked with, you know, the Beatles, we were working with Blur. So it was, you know, it was an exciting, incredible time. And as I said, you know, you suddenly the world was your oyster. So for us, I look back on that with such incredible fond memories. And we did that, you know, very happily for, I can't even remember, 2 or 3 years,
yep.
But both of us had this desire to, you know, want to work for ourselves. I think we also saw that the internet presented different opportunities. So, you know, typically, a record company had a sort of a boom bust approach to marketing. So, you know, band has a record out,
right?
Let's market it. Band goes away for it again until the next record comes out. But actually, you know, we saw the way in which we kind of went to the fan end, and the fan wants to interact with the band all year round. So, you know, actually we started to change our thinking around marketing to be much more, you know, that always on. It was kind of social media before social media. You know, we would build an artist website, we would create a community on a message board, you know, before things like Facebook or Twitter or anything existed.
Right.
But those same kind of principles. And of course, the band wants to communicate with their fans all year round too, because they might be touring, they might, you know, be scoring, music for a film, or, you know, there's all sorts of different things or reasons why they want to build that relationship with their fan base.
Now, Lloyd, there's so many things going on here. I mean, you're early adopting, you're innovating, you have almost no fear of failure. A visionary? Can I use that label as well? Did you see yourself as any of those? Because all of that's happening, right? All of that's going on.
No.
It wasn't just blind luck, Lloyd. Let me tell you. What was going on?
Well, as I said, we were just, you know, we were having fun, being brutally honest. That was the key.
Yeah.
You know, we were having fun. And, you know, and actually looking back on it now, and you sort of some other things, we were given the space and the environment to do that, you know, and I think that, you know, that is credit to the people that were our bosses at the time to allow us to do that.
Now, what happened in order that allowed you to scale that operation and then end up selling it to Saatchi? Was there something else that happened in order for you that's a big deal to create something that is a viable proposition for a big organization to acquire it. Something else must have happened. What was that?
So I suppose so we were both, as I said, both at EMI, Parlophone, and we, doing great, but decided to leave and set up the agency to, essentially not just work with EMI, but to work with, the whole music industry.
Okay.
Which we did very happily for a number of years, was brilliant fun. What we saw was that actually music turned into, computer games and films, and, we became an entertainment kind of agency. And we did that, as I said, very, very happily, probably for 4 or 5 years. But it was what everyone, and it used to drive us mad, but I now look back on it and go, yeah, it was what everyone deemed a lifestyle business. So, right. We were having great fun. We weren't okay, but it was definitely a lifestyle business. I think probably one of the things that changed was I had a child, and it was like, oh, I probably need to earn some more money.
That will focus the mind, won't it, Lloyd?
It focused the mind a little. And we started, the great thing about doing entertainment work is actually it's very high profile. So, the pay is not as good, but the profile is brilliant. So what we saw was that we were starting to get, two or three brands that wanted some of that, the entertainment stardust kind of, say right. tended to be the booze brands or the, so they were kind of starting to come to us.
Right.
And we saw that actually these guys had the budgets to bring to life the ideas that we had. Often we were sort of hamstrung by smaller budgets, and we always had the creativity. The thing that we found very quickly was we didn't necessarily have some of the rigor that those businesses needed.
Okay.
The
discipline and the finances.
The management, the reporting, the structures that they require for their business.
That's the maturity of a business as well, isn't it? Some of those things are about the maturity of a business.
100%. So at that point in time, we actually took on some investment mm-hmm. from a company, which allowed us to go and recruit the people that we needed that had that experience that could support us. And then we started to see the business really flourish in terms of our brand work. And started to shift much more towards brands, keeping entertainment really as the sort of the thing we did for fun and for pleasure, but the brand work became the sort of the cornerstone of the business, and actually, I really liked it because it's relatively easy to work with big music artists or whatever and do things that become famous. Trying to do something for British Gas and make that work is a greater challenge. And actually I found that quite rewarding personally.
That's amazing that something that you were passionate about, and you've used the word fun a number of times, was actually your living. How many years did it take for you to then get traction to the point where Saatchi said, yes, we'll have that, please?
We ran until we started the business probably 2000.
Yep.
2008, actually, we had an offer to buy. So we'd had the investment. We had an offer to buy the business. We were meant to be kind of closing. And obviously the crash happened. So the close didn't happen. But interestingly, what it did was it flushed out a price with the investor that we bought on. So Ant and I remortgaged, bought the investor out. We believed in ourselves, believed in the business. So we remortgaged, paid the investor off, and then grew for another 3 or 4 years before selling in 2012.
See, that's amazing in itself, isn't it? There's a huge risk, but utter faith in what you're doing and who you're doing it with and kind of what you believe in. And then, as you say, Saatchi came along and the rest is history to a point. Now, I know you moved, once you were bought, you actually remained operating within Saatchi. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, correct.
But you've got an interesting story as well, because you were still able to thrive, weren't you? You were still able to almost have that entrepreneurial spirit was very much alive.
Yeah, and I think when we sold to Saatchi, there were a number of suitors at that particular moment in time. We were ready for the next step from our perspective. We were looking for someone that could take us up the food chain a little bit with clients. And there were a number of different suitors. And actually we felt that the relationship with, the fit between us and Saatchi was really strong and really positive. They didn't, there was no kind of conflict of interest, and you know, there was a lot of alignment in terms of, you know, what they could deliver, what we could deliver, and how we could then make that benefit the clients. And again, you know, credit to the management team, the various people within the business, because they created an environment that allowed us to thrive. You know, they were very supportive. You know, obviously putting two companies together,
of course,
there's not lots of stories where that's been a happy.
Well, you can get organ rejection. We know that, don't we? History has told us that. But what was the environment then that they created or that you helped create that allowed you to continue to thrive as an entrepreneur within that business?
So I suppose, first and foremost, there were, you know, commercially some carve-outs that we were able to bring to the party, because we had a brilliant lawyer who actually said, look, you know, these are the things you're going to need to run your business in a more corporate environment to, you know, to succeed. So that was, you know, that was one.
So get a good lawyer. That's one.
Good advice.
But it was also
the spirit of the management there. You know, they wanted to drive through change, and they made sure that, you know, they backed us up when we needed it, you know, because there was a there were a few moments of the body rejecting the organ.
Right. And I think you mentioned, we were chatting earlier, weren't there, that there was a combination of the environment and the people together allowed you to thrive and flourish again within Saatchi.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, you know, you can, like, everything comes back to people.
Yep.
Absolutely everything, you know, because if you've got a great team and a great blend of skills and a great blend of personalities, you can kind of achieve everything, you know. And all my analogies, unfortunately, always go back to football, but you only have to look at a football team to see, you can have, you know, a selection of the best players in the world, but if they're not operating as a team, they don't, you know, you don't get the results, you know. And then you've got teams that in theory don't have the, you know, don't have all the superstar talent, but really operate as a team, and they just outperform where they should be. And it's the same in business, you know. It's people and teamwork are, for me, the most critical bits of success.
I completely agree with you. And I'm looking at an iconic picture of an England player behind you as we chat on Zoom. And this could very quickly turn into a football podcast, because we both love football, but it won't. Now, I'm shortening the story slightly. So after a successful acquisition by Saatchi & Saatchi, you yourself have become an investor in a number of companies now, haven't you? So why are you investing in other startups? What's the appeal?
The people, you know, you used the term earlier, entrepreneurism, but never felt like that, if I'm honest. You know, I actually think I'm quite cautious. You know,
okay.
The sort of image of people that are entrepreneurs is, you know, huge risk takers, and, you know, I think I'm quite a cautious, you know, calculated, maybe.
That's just your age now, Lloyd.
Maybe. But I guess just, I love seeing things flourish.
Right.
I think probably, you know, that bit where things start to take off is just so exciting. And I think, you know, it's great to be involved in that. The feeling of momentum and the feeling of freedom are probably the things that drive me.
Right.
And that's the startup world, you know. That's the good bit. The bad bit is, every day's you're in constant beta. Every day's another challenge.
That's true. Test, test, and test again. I love the fact that you don't recognize yourself in these startups. It's great. You've been an entrepreneur all your life. You just say, I don't recognize those people. I'm much more risk averse now. But what do you think is one of the most attractive things for you when you come to invest in something? Is it the idea? Is it the person or the people? Or is it the opportunity? It's probably a combination, to be fair. But is there something that stands out for you?
For me, it's the idea first, and then the people. I would like to say it's the people first, because ultimately you're investing in them.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I can identify someone that I think is going to be successful, but I only get to pick this particular project. So they might, you know, across their however long their career is, you know, you sort of know they're going to get a hit. But you've got to pick which one it is.
You're looking for a match, aren't you?
For life, yeah. So you have to like the idea, And then you have to believe the person can deliver it, you know.
Now, you are a serial entrepreneur because you're at it again. You've now co-founded Pep Talk. So tell us a little bit about this new project.
To be honest, the one thing I haven't talked about anywhere near enough, as I said, is my partner Anne, who, you know, that for me is sort of that going back to people being the secret to success, or that partnership as part of that is the secret to success.
I saw a post, I think you put on LinkedIn. Is it 25 years you've been in business together?
Over 25 years, yeah. I
mean, is that longer than your marriage? I don't know. Should I ask that?
It's about the same sort of time. <All right. laughs> But yes, so you've completely thrown me off there.
Yeah, sorry about that, Lloyd. Well, to be fair, you did put the post out there. I think it was 25 years together. Brilliant.
Effectively, so we finished the journey at Saatchi, and then both was kind of doing, you know, bits of everything. So bits of investing, bits of consulting, bits of this, bits of that. And we were still working on stuff together, but we're also apart a little bit.
Yep.
What we both realized is that we're not very good on the sidelines. We're roll your sleeves up and get stuck in kind of people. So whilst investing and consulting is great, you know, we just wanted to, you know, we wanted to be back in the fray together. So we, you know, we thought about lots of different things, but the idea of Pep Talk really came about because I suppose the journey that we've been on and all of the people that we've met along the way,
yep,
really helped inform us, you know, changed our minds, given us ideas, given us encouragement. And we wanted to see if we could bring that to a much bigger audience, you know. So, you know, literally the first ever slide we wrote was about democratizing access to experience.
And that's
the idea of Pep Talk, really. Now, a number of the slides after it have changed, but actually everything always comes back to that. So Pep Talk now is essentially, we have a subscription service. So every week, a different expert comes on and talks about, you know, whether it's, you know, mental health, whether it's creativity, whether it's how to sleep better, but all in relation to how to help you perform better at work. So we have a subscription service. It's like a town hall with the world's smartest experts, I guess. And that is something that businesses of every size can subscribe to. So, you know, whether you're a three-man shop or, you know, 3,000 or 300,000, it's just a different price point, but giving the same access, the same knowledge, the same experience to everybody.
Well, it's using what you know and also using the technology now to scale, isn't it? As you say, it could be a company of three people or a company of 300,000 people.
Correct. You know, and as I said, what's important to us is that we just love seeing things progress. We love the potential in people. You know, I think one of the greatest things we've ever done really through our journey is to just give people a chance. You know, they, you know, 99 times out of 100, they surprise you at how fantastic they can be. Often they're just put in a box by, you know, organizations. And this really is, you know, just part of that journey of trying to help people realize their potential and be the best they can be, which sounds a little bit cheesy, but is kind of the truth.
So here's a question for you. What would you say was your biggest learning that you've taken from everything that you've done from Postroom onwards that's really helped you for Pep Talk? Is there a standout lesson that you've carried with you?
There's probably two or three, but I mean, so
by all means, share. This is the gold nugget stuff.
So, you know, just start is that, you know, so I think people are too worried about perfection all the time. So, you know, like I said, it's constant beating. You just have to start, you know, and one thing always leads to another. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's been, you know, a huge learning, and certainly something I would probably, when I was younger, I would always be more concerned about having or trying to make everything perfect before starting that journey.
Right.
You got to roll with the punches. Every day is different. You know, don't take every high and low as gospel. You know, it all smooths out
in the end.
Communicate. You know, communicate with the team constantly. Again, I think, you know, there's this belief of, like, I do believe in a big North Star and everything, but just talk to people, you know, all the time and keep it simple. You know, we're a small team, but actually, even in Saatchi, there was, you know, there might have been 500-600 people, but really there's a small team of people that are really driving the agenda. And it always amazes me, coming back to that teamwork point, how much, you know, even a small team can do, and how quickly you can move and how much energy you can create. And that energy becomes infectious. So, you know, if you're creating that buzz and that feel, everyone picks up on it and everyone wants to do their bit.
Gotcha.
You know, so, and then the last thing I think is just, you know, be relentless. There's back to football, but
that's all right.
Brilliant. Alex Ferguson, I don't know if it's a quote or saying or belief, but he was like, you know, nobody ever beat us. We just ran out of time. You know, that idea that they'll just keep going. And that's, you know, to be a startup, that's what you need. And I think, to be honest, even in big businesses, that's what you need, because they have to evolve and they have to change. And you just got to, you know, keep plugging away.
You and I are definitely going to do a football podcast. I think it's inevitable. Now, how can people get hold of you? So if people want to get in touch, especially as regards Pep Talk, how do they do that?
So it's getapeptalk.com.
Getapeptalk.com. All right. And if people wanted to connect with you and kind of have a dialogue, how could they do that?
Probably the easiest thing is just grab me on LinkedIn. So I'm more than happy to connect and more than happy to speak to people. Rather than writing down email addresses, just grab us on LinkedIn and say hello.
And that's just at Lloyd Salmons on LinkedIn, yeah. Correct? Gotcha. Yep. All right, I've got some.
Lloyd Salmons is a pretty, there's not many Lloyd Salmons in the world, so I'm usually quite...
You are the Lloyd Salmons, and I'm looking at you, so I can confirm that. Listen, I've got some fun questions for you as well. I know we've been in a global pandemic. Let's hope we're coming out the back end of that as well. What's your favourite hobby? Have you got a hobby that's seen you through the last 13 months? It might be a new one or it might be an old one, but what's kind of kept you... busy?
So I like to keep fit, and I like boxing, so that's always that always keeps me going. Having said that, what I have, which I swore I'd never got, but we got a Peloton recently, and it's been game changing. Actually, it was probably a little bit too dare I say woo woo for me, like the kind of the American rah rah, you know. But actually I've loved it and it's been great for the whole family. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
How often are you using it?
Depends on it each week, but you know, generally I'm on 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh, well then that's respect to you. I think it's been tough to try and do anything over the last 12 or 13 months. Here's my final question for you. What would now, this is going to be a good one for you actually, what would be your best advice to a 21-year-old Lloyd?
Buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's not a volatile ride, is it?
Yeah, if I'd have bought it way back when.
I'd be talking to you from your Caribbean island.
Exactly, yeah. Interestingly, obviously, you know, much of what we did was, you know, we had a lot of coders and whatnot. So loads of those guys obviously did buy Bitcoin,
yep.
You know, before anybody even knew what it was. So they're sitting pretty right now.
Oh, just it's not fair to be jealous on a podcast, is it, when you just say that? Okay, so buy Bitcoin. I can't ask for anything better than that. Listen, you've been an absolute star. Thanks so much for taking the time out and coming on to the Leadership Enigma. And I know that Pep Talk is going great guns, so maybe we'll get you back on the show. And you can tell us a little bit more about the... I know what's going to happen. You'll end up selling that and then starting something else, and we'll just have to do another conversation if you're up for that.
Sounds good. I like that. You can... I'll hold you to that if that's okay.
All right. Deal.
Thank you.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.